Okay, we're beginning here on the two dots on the top of Chaf Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is commenting on the latter half of the Mishnah, which is a kelev shenatal charara. You have a dog who picks up a piece of dough, cake. It's a type of dough that's cooked directly on the coals. And so when he picks it up, he's probably picking up along with it either some coals that are attached to it, some embers that are with it. And then valach the gadish, he goes and puts it down on a pile of grain. He eats that dough or that bread, hidlika gadish, and then he sets the whole thing on fire, obviously not intentionally, but because he moved this hot item from the fire itself over to the gadish. So there, alacharara mishalem nezak shalem, on the loaf or on the bread itself, he pays nezak shalem, alagadish mishalem chatzi nezak. And then for the gadish itself, he pays chatzi nezak, and we're going to discuss now why that is, or what exactly happens over here. So now we have Itmar. With regards to the Hezek of Eish, Eish is a difficult type of Nezek because it involves Koach Acher Mu'urabbo. There's another item that is involved with the movement and the Eish itself, and therefore Eish is somewhat different than many of the other Mazikim. And that's why we have here a machloket. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Isho Mishum Chitzav. That Eish, the reason you're Chayav, is because it's like your arrow. Rish Lakish Amar, Isho Mishum Mimono. Eish, you're Chayav for because it's like your money. Now first of all, Isho Mishum Chitzav. Rashi over here explains that Isho Mishum Chitzav means that Chayavo HaKatuv, Di'ihu Ka'avit, Tavik Zorek Chetz. The reason you're chayav over here is because it's as if you're doing it, and it's as if you are shooting an arrow. The comparison to shooting an arrow is that when you shoot an arrow, you're here, and the damage is done somewhere far away from where you are actually present. So that's the idea of an chetz, or an arrow, is that you're able to cause impact or damage somewhere far away from where you are. And similarly, eish, you're able to create damage, even though you lit the fire proximate to yourself, the fire can spread and do damage somewhere else. So therefore Rashi sees it's as if you're doing it, even though the damage is separated from you yourself or from where you lit the fire or shot the arrow. And so that's the dimyon or the comparison between them. But Rashi takes it much more literally than we'll see that others do, which is that we look at the fire as if you shot an arrow. Even though by shooting an arrow, it's your koach. It's actually your power or strength that creates the trajectory of the arrow. Whereas by eish, your lighting of the fire sets something in motion, but it doesn't necessarily create the trajectory of the fire. That is where koach acher murabo comes in. The ruach and other things come in. What we're going to have to say is that you should have anticipated that. Since you should have anticipated that, the combination of the wind and the fire is as if you empowered the fire with that wind to fly, just like when you shoot an arrow. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, Isho mishum chitzav, lo shi'avir ba'atzmo ha'esh, ela kol makom shepasha, velo shamar gachalato, chitzav ninhu. So Tosafot here very much focuses on your lack of shmirah, that you're posheya over here, on the embers or on the fire that was lit. So this goes back to what we discussed earlier in the Masechta about what is the reason you're chayav for nezek. Are you chayav for nezek because of the fact that you are doing the nezek, or we attribute the nezek to you somehow? We create a connection between you and the object that's doing the nezek. Or do we say that the reason you're chayav for nezek is because you had a failure somewhere in shmirah, or that you're a posheya, that you're negligent, and that's what causes the obligation over here? It's clear here that Tosafot does not go with the literal interpretation of Isho Mishum Chitzav, with the Rashi did, which seemingly connects it directly to you and looks like it's your direct damage. Tosafot very much focuses on that Kol Mokom Shepasha V'lo Shamar Gachalato, that you were a posheya and did not watch the coal and did not guard the coal, then Chitzav Ninu. It becomes, or is it attributed to you as if you shot an arrow? So the comparison here to chitzim is less direct. It's not like what Rashi suggests, where it's literally like you're shooting an arrow. Over here, it's a figurative arrow, which is similar to arrows, which do damage far away. Here also the damage is done far away from you, but your responsibility is not generated by the shooting of the arrow, but rather by your failure to stop the ish from spreading or to somehow contain the fire. And so that's a big difference between Rashi and Tosfot and the explanation of Isho Mishum Chitzav. The same thing happens here by Isho Mishum Mimono. Rashi over here says Mishum Mimono, Kishoro Uboro Sheziku. It's identical to any other object or mamon that you have that does damage. And now we're going to think, and Rashi reiterates this throughout the sugya, that could go and shelik begachelet she'enu shalom. Mimono literally means your property. And so Rashi is suggesting now that if the fire was not your property, that you would not be chayav, according to Reish Lakish. Mimono literally means you need to own the problem in order for you to be responsible for it. If you don't own it, you're not going to be responsible for that. The Baalei HaTosafot are loath to accept this explanation for a number of reasons. One of which is, whoever heard of the fact that if you light a fire and you're mafkir it, then all of a sudden you're not responsible for the fire anymore. If you go ahead and smash a hammer on something and then a spark goes flying out, which clearly it's not your mamon, it's not yours, the spark, nevertheless, you are considered to be chayav for it in that case. In addition, if you go into your friend's yard, pick up his coal, and do something with the coal, or kofef komato, you take his grains and tip it towards the fire, you're not going to be responsible, it's not mimono. So for all those reasons, Tosafot is unwilling to accept Rashi's explanation over here that it has to literally be your ownership in order to be chayav. So therefore, he says, Tosafot makes it clear, it doesn't have to be your fire. What it means, mimono, is attribution, which is that we're attributing the nezek to you like it's your mamon. And so what he says is that mimono doesn't mean that we look at it as if it is literally yours, you own it, and that's necessity for you to be chayav, but it's really about responsibility. What connects you to the fire? And that's what the word mimono means, is that you have a responsibility for this. So even if you light someone else's fire or someone else's stuff, you will still be chayav, because mimono just indicates responsibility, indicates that there is a connection between you and the nezek. As opposed to Rashi, who views mimono literally as being ownership in order to be chayav, what you'll have to answer on behalf of Rashi is that all the questions that Tosafot brings down on Rashi involve very, very direct human involvement, and Rashi will have to call those Adam HaMazik rather than Ish, because in all those cases, you're so directly involved that it's no longer mimono, but rather you're taking some sort of action that makes you an Adam HaMazik rather than Isho Mishom Mimono. In that same way, if you look at the Baalei HaTosafot at least, you could explain that machloka between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish revolving around the Chakira that we had just mentioned before about why you're Chayav for Nezek. Is the Chiyuv HaNezek a lack of Shmirah, a Pshia, which Tosafot attributes to Rabbi Yochanan's position of Isho Mishum Chitzav? Whereas, when you come to Reish Lakish, Tosafot says it's not about your Posheya, it's not about the fact that you were negligent here, but simply, it's about the connection between you and the damage that is done. And therefore, the Chakira, or what you could suggest, I think Rav Soloveitchik suggests this way also, is that that Machloket, according to Tosafot, revolves around your understanding of Nezek. And that would be the difference between Rabbi Yochanan Shita and Reish Lakish Shita, according to the Baalei HaTosafot. But to sum up here, we have two opinions. Rabbi Yochanan views Eish Mishum Chitzav, which means that, according to Tosafot, you were poshe, according to Rashi, you shot an arrow. But for that reason, we don't have to worry about how closely connected you are to the damage that is done. As long as you were the one who set the fire in motion, we are going to make you responsible no matter what the outcome or the results of that are. For Reish Lakish, we're going to need a tighter involvement of you and the fire itself. For Rashi, that means ownership. And for the Baalei HaTosafot, it means that you have to have some sort of responsibility here, or something that attributes responsibility. And that will be something that is much more direct to the fire you lit, less about the results or the extent of the fire, because we can't draw responsibility once it leaves a certain perimeter or limitations that you have because of the way that Reish Lakish formulates this. Just as a sidebar, because it's so famous, there is a extremely famous Nemuke Yosef over here who's very bothered by this formulation of Rabbi Yochanan of Isho Mishum Chitzav, which makes it sound like you can put something in motion and be responsible for it wherever it goes. Here the Nemuka Yosef asks a very fundamental question. He says, Bikashalach, Imkain, if Rabbi Yochanan is right of Isho Mishum Chitzav, how do you light your candles going into Shabbat if Isho Mishum Chitzav? Which means that the fire, we look at it as if it's your arrows, and the result of whatever happens there is your responsibility, or we attribute to you. That means when you light the candles, and the candles continue to burn on Shabbat, that's your chetz, that's your koach doing it on Shabbat. So how are you lighting the candles before Shabbat and allowing them to burn into the Shabbat itself if you hold Isho Mishum Chitzav? V'chein, machizin et or b'midura, v'lechem v'nigmeret ha'dakata b'Shabbat. You set on the bonfire or the heating, you put it on before Shabbat, and the results continue to go all the way through Shabbat. U'fizeh areyu k'ilu hivirahu b'atzmo b'Shabbat. And it's as if he's burning things on Shabbat itself, and how are you allowed to do this? It's a koshekein, because over here he had no intent to burn down his friend's stuff, and yet we still attribute it to him. And here your intent is that it will continue to burn, meaning that here there's more reason to attribute the action directly to you if you say Isho Mishum Chitzav, because you intended for the candle to burn into the Shabbat. Whereas in the other case, it was unintentional, and we still attribute it to you. So what are we going to do? Or how do we answer that? And in the first parak in Shabbat, it's clear that the Mishnayot say that you're allowed to light fires going into Shabbat. The classic example there is the Korban HaPesach, that you're allowed to have the Korban HaPesach and cook it going into Shabbat. And we're not worried about Shema Yechateh B'Gechalim because the Bnei Chabura is Rizim. But you're allowed to cook and have the fire keep burning straight into the Shabbat. So why is it that you're allowed to do that? So if you look at this carefully, it's not really a question. This obligation of making it like an arrow means it's just like an arrow. The action is complete from the moment that the arrow leaves your hand. Meaning that once you shoot the arrow, that action or your connection to the arrow is completed in its entirety. That means that we don't see any activity after this point. So for instance, if the arrow was to go out then and do damage or kill someone, we would assume that the Maisa Amita happened from the time you shot the arrow, not from the moment that the person was killed, and not the moment that the damage was done. Your action is from the moment that you shot the arrow. I don't think you have to say what he says here, but he says that otherwise you should be patur because you become anus, because you can't reverse your action. Therefore now it's a position. I don't think you have to go as far as to say that. Achinami, ilu meit koden, she he speak ladlika gadish, badai mishalem, nizak, me'achrayut nechasim didei. So this is the nafkamina. The big nafkamina is at first that you shoot an arrow, or you light a fire, and then the person passes away before the damage is done. Are you responsible? Well, that's a key nafkamina. If you think that all the action is taken immediately when you shoot the arrow, then you were alive when the damage, quote-unquote, was caused, or the death was caused, you were alive for it. If you say that it only happens at the moment of the impact, that's when the damage happens, then the person's already passed away, you would not be responsible. And that's what he says here. It's clear here, if the individual passes away, he would be responsible for shooting that arrow, because everything happened at that moment. Why should you be responsible? You already did, he passed away. So he leans towards the explanation of the Balei HaTosafot. I think the reason is it's much easier to explain what he's saying in the sheet of the Balei HaTosafot, which is that the failure to watch the Eish over here is what generates the Chiyuv Nezek. Therefore, you're able to concentrate the problem. If you say that the problem is Mishum Pshia, then we know the moment of Pshia was when you did not guard the Eish, and that's all up front. So it's much easier than to say that everything is taking place immediately as soon as you are a Posheya. And therefore, it's easier to explain that this all happened immediately. If you say, like Rashi, this is if you're shooting an arrow, there it's less mukhrach that you would say that. But here, if you concentrate the problem in the negligence of not watching it, then for sure, all the problem happened up front. All the action happened up front. V'chein adin l'inyan Shabbat. T'chi atchil mi'erev Shabbat, atchil mikan la'agamei b'yadayim ha'u idan alet be'isur chashiv. By Shabbat, once you begin on Erev Shabbat, everything is done from the moment you light the candle. Everything afterwards is almost predetermined that will happen, and you don't have any involvement because you're lighting at the moment you lit it, cause everything else to happen afterwards. Now it's interesting there, because there it involves no pshia, so he's still saying it even more than just when you're posheya, although it makes it easier by nezek, but by Erev Shabbat he's concluding that the same thing, that it's as if you put everything in motion. The other way to deal with the answer of the Mukhei Yosef is to say that the rest on Shabbat, or the idea of rest on Shabbat, is not that you're kelim, not that melacha is not done on Shabbat. The idea is that you are not involved with a melacha directly on Shabbat. And that way you could separate the items and say that the reason you're patur on Shabbat, even if you really believe ishom ishum chitzav, and it's as if you're doing this action all the way through, but we don't have a problem with melacha being done on Shabbat. We know that because fire can burn on Shabbat. You can have your lights on Shabbat. You can have your stove top on Shabbat. The blech on. All of these things are melachot that would take place on Shabbat. Our only thing that we are worried about is your direct connection to that item. So here, once you've severed, I would call it the direct physical connection, even though halachically we're going to attribute the action to you, that may not be what the Isur of Shabbat revolves around. The Isur of Shabbat might revolve around you engaging directly in the melacha. And in that way, you could separate or differentiate. And even like Rashi, who says that it's literally chitzav, and even though we would say that the action continues to take place, that might be by nezek that that's enough to obligate you. But by Shabbat, that may not be relevant, because even though melacha happens on Shabbat, and we know that your kelim, according to at least the Beit Hillel and that Beit Shammai, don't have to be shuvet, then the fact that melacha goes on is not problematic. It's only that you're not engaged in melacha, and this may not be called being engaged in melacha, even though technically the responsibility is attributed to you. So that's the other way to deal with the Mukhei Yosef. Anyway, it's a very famous Mukhei Yosef that comes out of a sugya in the middle of Bava Kamma about Neirot Shabbat, so it's always worthwhile just to take a tangent to see that the Mukhei Yosef. So now, the Gemara says, Reish Lakish, my time alo amar ki Rabbi Yochanan. Why doesn't Reish Lakish subscribe to Rabbi Yochanan's position? Amalacha, chitzav, mikocho, ka'azle. This is the clear deficit in the explanation, especially the way that Rashi explains it, which is that by a chitz, by an arrow, it's clearly your koach that is driving the arrow. Hi, lo mikocho, ka'azle. Over here by Eish, it's clear that there's an exogenous variable that's moving the fire, which is wind, which is not necessarily connected to you directly. It might be you should have anticipated, but it might be that you should have considered that, but it's still not your koach. And therefore, Reish Lakish says that the comparison to chitzim is not good because of this difference between them. Rabbi Yochanan, my time, alo marak Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan, why doesn't he subscribe to Rabbi Reish Lakish's view that it's mimono? Amar lecha, mimona it be mamasho. When it comes to your mamon, we're usually talking about something that has substance to it. You're talking about something that you own. You have to own something that is tangible and that is real. Over here, fire does not consider it to be something of substance, especially when you're talking about the flame of the fire, which is that which does damage, right? The flame of the fire doesn't really exist. It's just consuming everything in its path. Now, you have to ask, first of all, about boar. Boar is a little bit of a problem because boar itself, in its paradigmatic form, is the lack of an item, not something being there. I mean that when you dig a bore, you've dug out a pit. So it's a lack of ground that makes it into something that is a mazik. Now the truth is that we look at even things that are tangible as borot. If you leave things out in the Rishut Rabim, that's called a bore as well. So that's one way to solve the problem, just to say that bore has different manifestations. The other way to say is that still bore still has finite and tangible limitations to where it is and the hezek that it does because of the fact that you dug out a pit. As well as the fact that later on we have the machloket Rav and Shmuel about what the obligation of bor is. Is it because of hevel or chavata? Especially according to the one who says that it's chavata, the impact. And the bor, you're dealing with things that are mamash, things that are of substance and real. Whereas by eish, you're dealing with something that is very intangible. And in a sense, Ish doesn't exist. It simply feeds on the fuel that it is given, and it itself has no existence without the fuel that allows the ish to continue.
Well, the Rabbeinu Chananel says the ha'ashel hevet ha'mazeket ein ba mamash lehishamer. It has nothing tangible which you can watch. K'mo ashor u'kiyotzebo. You're talking about tangible items. It's much easier to speak about shmirah. When you're talking about an intangible item, it's much harder to speak of shmirah.
And so for that reason, Rabbi Yochanan says I can't look at it as mimono. So both shitot clearly have a deficit over here, and they're pointing at each other's deficits. Rabbi Yochanan favors chitzim, despite the fact that it is not your direct koach, whereas Reish Lakish favors mamono, even though it's not something that's tangible, but he favors the idea that it's a responsibility, or rather than it being koach, which is really not your koach over here. So now obviously this is brought here because of our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Tran, hakelev shnatal charara. The kelev that takes this loaf out with the coals and then lights things on fire. Bishlam alaman damar isho mishum chitzav. If you hold like Rabbi Yochanan that the problem of ish is it's that your chetz is if you shot an arrow, chitzav the kelev hu. Then it becomes the arrows of the dog. And if it's the arrows of the dog, you're going to be responsible for the arrows of the dog, as Rashi says over here. Dehavalei tsrarot. That's the equivalent of koach of the dog, or koach of an animal. And we've already seen now that the koach of the animal is deemed to be tsrarot. And tsrarot you're going to pay chatzi nezek for. So, elanda amar isho mishum mimono, ha eish lav mimono de balakelefu. So here, the eish, the fire, is not the money, is not the ownership of the balakelef, of the owner of the dog. So for Rabbi Yochanan, it's very easy to understand what happened over here. The dog carries the coals and does something with the coals. Because he does something with the coals, it now becomes the koach of the kelev. And as the koach of the kelev, you, the owner of the dog, are now responsible not only for what the dog does, you're also responsible for his koach. So anything he does directly, you'll be responsible with nezek shalem. Anything he does indirectly, you'll be chayav chatzi nezek because that is tzrarot. And therefore the Mishnah is understandable for the dough itself, for the cake itself that he ate, you're chayav nezek shalem. For the burning down of the gadish, which is a result of the koach of the kelev, you're chayav chatzi nezek. For Reish Lakish, who says, isho mishum mimono, then for Rashi, it's clear what the deficit is that the coals that come here are not the coals. You don't own them. It's not yours, literally. You physically don't own them. And therefore, it's not your responsibility. For the Balei Tosafot, it says that the responsibility is not yours because the fact that the dog got a hold of the coals was the problem of the bala fire, of the bala eish, because for every reason the dog got in there, that is something that he should have protected against or anticipated, and therefore the responsibility does flow to the bala eish, not to the bala kelev. So for that reason, Reish Lakish is going to have to come up with an explanation that helps us to understand the Mishnah. So Amalcha Reish Lakish, Hachamai Eskinan, what's the case here? The Adje Aduye. So this is something, again, we saw before with regards to the chicken that had the string tied around its leg. Over there, the Gemara also used the terminology, the Adye Adjuye. And once again here, that distinction between the way Rashi and the Reino Chananel explained it there appears here as well. Rashi says Adye Adjuye is that he threw it. That the dog did not simply take it and put it down somewhere else, but he actually threw the coal to the new location. Rabbeinu Chananel, similar to his shita by the case of Dalil, says that Adjuye Adjuye means dida, that he didn't pick it up, but he rolled it. He nudged it along until it got to that location. Therefore, dala charara, mishalem nezek shalem. On the charara, there's no question here that he's going to pay nezek shalem, because the dog eating the dough or the bread is clearly normal behavior, something that you could have expected, and therefore you're responsible for that. V'makom ha-gachelet, mishalem chatzi nezek. On the direct location of where the gachelet lands, over there you pay chatzi nezek, because that is the equivalent of tsrarot. Either because Rashi, he threw it into the air, and therefore it's tsrarot, it's the koach of the dog. Or Rashi in the Lishnah Achrina entertains the possibility that it's keren, because it's a mishuneh, it's an unusual activity or action of the animal, the dog here. Or according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, because he rolled it along the ground, and not that he picked it up in his mouth, and then put it down somewhere else, but he rolled it along, which is also kocho. or the equivalent of a stone rolling away and doing damage, and therefore you pay chatzi nezek for the place where it landed. Valgadish kula patur. But for Reish Lakish, for the remainder of the pile of grain, you will be patur. The reason being that we can no longer attribute the problem to the dog anymore. Because the dog's actions end, number one, with the eating of the item itself, with the koach, which means that the coal itself, wherever it lands and does damage, that is his koach, and therefore you'll be responsible for that. The spread of the fire once it lands, that we cannot attribute to the dog, because Reish Lakish believes it has to be Memono. Over there, it's not Memono, it's not his Eish. If it's not his Eish, we can't make him responsible for the extent of the Eish that goes beyond there. The Bala Eish likely will be Chayav for that. If we assume that there's nothing extenuating here by the dog taking it, then the Bala Eish would be possibly responsible for it, but the Bala Kelev will be completely patur, because there's no way to connect him to the spread of the fire afterwards, because it was something that came out of, or was a result of the tzrorot, of the koach of the kelev, that we can't attribute to it. Which, as Tosfot notes over here, is pashut to the Gemara, mishum ezu drasha de patur al eish behemto. For some reason, the Gemara is certain that an eish created by your behemah, you're not going to be responsible for. Even though by bor, we needed a specific drasha to tell us that ki chre ish bor, and not shor bor, that only when a person digs a bor are you responsible. When an animal digs a bor, you're not responsible. Even though we don't have a similar drasha over here, nevertheless, Tosafot suggests that there is a similar drasha, and he says that it derives from the fact that there's only gimel avot nemru b'shor v'lo yoter, that there are only gimel avot nezikin that you can associate with an animal, and since eish is not associated with the animal, you can't make the owner culpable for the eish that the animal puts into action. On the other hand, the Rashbo simply says that after we learned by bor, that it says ki yichre ish bor v'lo shor bor, we extend that to the other avot nezikin, and we'll say the same thing by eish, that it will be that only an Adam can be responsible for the eish that he created or caused to spread, but a animal, which is mimono, the owner will not be responsible to the eish that spreads afterwards, unless we can directly connect it to the animal. So now, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, the ancha anuche, that the dog actually placed it down. Therefore, alacharra, v'amakoma gechelet mesaleim nezak shaleim. Therefore, for the eating of the bread or the dough or the cake, he will be chayav nezak shaleim. The place of the coal where it burns itself, you will also be chayav nezak shaleim, because there he directly did the damage by placing it down. V'gadish, mishaleim chatzi nezak. And then on the gadish, we'll consider that to be chitzav of the dog. And if it's chitzav of the dog, that's rorot, and you're chayav chatzi nezak. So for Rabbi Yochanan, the fact that it's chitzav makes it that you're able to connect much more of the damage directly to the dog and be extent of the koach of the dog. Therefore, you are responsible for more of what happens, at least. So the Bala Kelev is partially responsible, depending on what the status of the Bala Eish is in this situation, how negligent or how problematic his behavior was. So Tashma. So here we bring down a Mishnah that we're going to see later on in the Masechta. Gamal, Ta'un Pishtan, Ve'avar B'Shut HaRabim. You have a laden camel that is walking through the Shut HaRabim. Nichnasa Pishtano L'Toch HaChanut. The load on the back of the camel sticks in or goes into the store. V'Dalko B'Neiro Shel Chenvani. And then it catches fire. The storekeeper has a candle, has something burning inside of his store to illuminate his store. This gamal going by has a wide load, and the wide load goes into his store and catches fire. Ve'dliket abira. And then it lights the house on fire, the whole area on fire. Bala gamal chayav. There it's clear that the bala gamal, the owner of the camel, is responsible because he was the cause of the fire over here. His overloading of the camel is what caused the fire to ignite and to spread. Heniach hachenvani neiro b'machutz. If the storekeeper, in order to illuminate the area, put the candle not in his store, but rather outside of his store, chenvani chayav, then the storekeeper is responsible, because in that case, he went out into the public domain, an area where you can expect that there are going to be camels carrying loads going through, and his placing of the candle there was the problem, and you can't put that onus on the bala gamal, because he was acting normally, ke'ur chayu. And that's really the question here is it in your property or is it in the public domain, and who's acting normally over here? So when the Bala Gamal is acting normally and the Chenvani is the one who put his candle outside, the Chenvani, the storekeeper, is going to be responsible. In the case where the storekeeper keeps the candle in his store, then the Bala Gamal is the one who acted out of the ordinary, which is that he loaded his Gamal to the point that it stuck into the stores, or he moved his Gamal in a place where it allowed the load to go into the store, and therefore he's responsible. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'ner Chanukah patur. When it comes to Ner Chanukah, if the person put the Nerot Chanukah outside, he would be patur because, as Rashi says, mitzvah lenicha b'rishut rabim. It's a mitzvah to put out in Rishut Rabim, the Pursumei Nisa. In order to publicize the miracle, there is both a necessity and a dispensation to place the candles outside. And therefore you can't put responsibility on the Chenvani because he did what would be expected in this case, which is that you have permission to put your Nerot Chanukah outside. Now what's interesting about the Rashi over here, this is a sidebar, is there's a Machloket Rashi in Tosafot, on the Gemara and Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet in Shabbat, as to whether when you have a house that sits in a courtyard, and then the courtyard opens up into the Rishut Rabim, where do you place the candles? Do you place the candles by the door to the house, or do you place the candles by the door to the Chatzer? Over there, Rashi, interesting enough, says you place it by the door of the house. The Balei Tosafot disagree and say, no, you have to put it by the door to the Chatzer, because the Pursumei Nisa is about being out towards the Rishut Rabim. Over here, Rashi says that mitzvah lenicha b'shut rabim, if it's referring to Nisa, seems to be similar to the Balei Tosafot over here. Obviously, it could be speaking about a case where there's no chatzer, but it's interesting just that Rashi focuses so much on the b'shut rabim, where in the Gemara and Shabbat, he focuses on the petach habayit, being the area where the candles go. If that happens also to be b'shut rabim, then you get that benefit. But otherwise, petach habayit is the key element for Rashi. The second thing is, and I've noted this before, that the word Chanukah, or the holiday of Chanukah, only appears in the Mishnayot about 3 times in Shas. And this Mishnah in Bava Kamma is, I think, the only place in Shas where Nerot Chanukah are mentioned in the Mishnah. So we'll get to that Mishnah later on, but just something to know about Nerot Chanukah. So Mar says, Bishlam Alaman Damar Isho Mishum Chitzav. But according to one who says, Isho Mishum Chitzav, Chitzav de Gamalu. The reason that the Bala Gamal is Chayav over here is because the Gamal where the Pishtan got caught, the load that he had, the flax that he had caught fire, and then the Gamal set that fire in motion to burn down all those things, and therefore it's the Chitzav, it's the arrows, the Koach of the Gamal, and that's why you are responsible. Elamanda Amar Mishum Mimono, if you want to say that the problem of Eish is Mimono, Hayesh La Mimona, the Bala Gamal Hu. Once again, you have a problem here because the fire belongs to the Chenvani, to the storekeeper, and is not or does not belong to the Bala Gamal. If it doesn't belong to the Bala Gamal, then why is he responsible over here? Amalach Leish Lakish, Achu Ma'iskin, and the case here is B'misach Tzechet. It's a case where the Gamal didn't simply walk or keep walking along, and therefore the fire that he left behind caught and spread. Rather, he himself spread the fire, because the fire on his back now with the flax, he starts bouncing around and he basically lights the whole place on fire. Now, so now he becomes much more directly involved in the fire because it's kocho. It's actually the koach of the gamal that's creating the fire, not simply that he put a fire in motion and the fire is spreading by itself. So that's how Reish Lakish will deal with that problem, which is that mesachsechet kol habira kula. That he literally lit the entire house on fire, lighting in the active form, which is not simply that he lit something and it spread, but he's literally taking the fire around and spreading it all over the house, and that's what's causing the damage because of his movement with the fire on his back. Eshlash's explanation of the case is not so far-fetched because of the fact there's a fire on his back, but you wouldn't have necessarily thought that, but Reish Lakish is pushed into a corner because otherwise how do you explain the responsibility of the Bala Gamal? In that you're only responsible for Makoma Gachelet, as we said before, the place where the coal lands, because that's Tzrorot. So now he has to make a bigger Tzrorot. How does he do that? He has the Gamal bouncing around and lighting fire to everything that's in its path. Ihachi, if that's the case, Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of that Mishnah? Imeniach Chenvani Nero Bachutz, if the Nero is outside, Chenvani Chayav. Wait a minute, there the Chenvani is Chayav. Ibe Mesach Sechet, Amai Chayav. If it's the case that he's spreading it, why is he chayav? If the gamal is bouncing around spreading it, why is the chenvani chayav? As Balei Tosafot point out over here, it's not that we think that the chenvani is patur over here. He says that Amai Chayav Chenvani Yakol Gam Bala Gamal Yitchayev Imo. That we want some sort of joint liability or responsibility over here. Why is it all on the Bala Chenvani? It's clear that the Chenvani, the storekeeper, has a problem here because he put his candle out in the Rishut Rabim. So he's clearly responsible or obligated at least for a portion of the damage. Question is, how much culpability does the Bala Gamal have over here? We're suggesting if the Gamal is the one spreading the fire everywhere, there should be a much higher level of culpability to the Gamal. Alright, so the Gemara says here, Bishamda. It's a case where the Gamal stayed in place. He was stationary. Amda v'sichacha. It stood in place, and it spread the fire. Gemara says, Koshkein dechenvani patur. Bal Gamal chayav. There, for sure, the chenvani should be patur, because here, the Gamal's staying stationary is what caused the whole problem. The Bala Gamal should have moved the Gamal out of this location so that the fire didn't spread. Over here, where the Gamal stays there and then spreads the fire, then it's clearly a Shia on the behalf of the Bala Gamal, because he could have prevented the whole fire from happening by simply moving out of harm's way, or out of the way that where it would not catch, the fire would not catch. So over there, you're even taking more culpability away from the Chenvani and placing it on the Bala Gamal. Clearly there that the Chenvani should be patur and more responsibility should be borne by the Bala Gamal. So Amar Rav Huna Bar Menoch, Mishmei D'Ravika, Ocho Ma'eskina, and the case here is Kigon She'amda La'til Me'me'ah. It's a case where it had to urinate. So now you have a problem of onus, which is that the Gamal is not moving, not because it is not being chased or moved by its owner, but simply that it won't move. Even if the owner pushes it here, it's relieving itself. And since it's relieving itself, it doesn't have any intention of moving until it's done. And no matter how much the owner pushes it, it's not going to move in that instance. So because of that, the Bala Chenvani becomes fully responsible, despite the fact that you have the Gamal being a participant in the problem. The problem is that he's stationary and that he's causing the fire to spread and touch everything. Over there, he's still not responsible, because the reason he became stationary, the reason he's doing this is simply because nature called. And because of nature calling, therefore the Gamal is considered, or the Bala Gamal is considered to be exempt in this case, and all the responsibilities borne by the Bala Chenvani, which is the storekeeper's issue. Here's the Gemara says, Reisha, Bala Gamal Chayav. In the Reisha, the Bala Gamal is Chayav, Deloi Baile Lefushe Bitiina. He shouldn't have overloaded the Gamal, he shouldn't have put such a load on it that it caught fire. Seifa Chenvani Chayav, Deloi Baile Lenuche Nero Me'evrai. And in Seifa, the Chenvani is responsible because he shouldn't put his candle outside. And therefore we understand now the Mishnah. The Mishnah has explained, and whether it's Rabbi Yochanan or Reish Lakish, this explains the bearing of responsibility, which is for Rabbi Yochanan, the Bala Gamal is Chayav in the first case because it was overloaded and therefore the fire caught onto the Pishtan. And then whatever it spread to afterwards, the Bala Gamal is responsible for because of Isho Mishum Chitzav. On the other hand, for Reish Lakish, the reason is because Sichsecha, he moved it around, the Bala Gamal moved it all over the place and lit everything on fire. The Seifa is the responsibility of the Chenvani because the fire is outside. So for him, Isho Mishum Chitzav, that's the Chetz, was already set in motion by the candle being outside. That's why the Chenvani is Chayav according to Rabbi Yochanan. For Reish Lakish, when the Gamal then catches on fire and stays stationary, the Bala Gamal is not Chayav there because he was relieving himself. And because of that, he has no direct responsibility for not moving the fire away. And then the Chenvani is the cause of the problem, because everything that caught or moved is directly from this flame that was outside. As the Balei Tosafot point out over here, the Gemara's summary over here hasn't changed from the Reish of the Seifa. We knew this before we ever got involved in this Machloket Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. That's how we would have explained the Mishnah, the Reish and the Seifa, the Mishnah. It just says that there was an additional level of complexity that was added once you talk within Reish Lakish. For Rabbi Yochanan, this was the reason in the beginning, and it seems very simple. For Reish Lakish, where you add in the Ukimta to solve the problem, that made the case much more complex. And what the Gemara is saying is still the bottom line of responsibility comes from the problematic behavior of one of the parties. The Bala Gamal, because he overloaded his animal, or from the Chenvani, because he put his candle outside. That's where the ultimate responsibility stems from. Then how we attribute the spread of the fire afterwards to which of the parties, that has to do with the explanation that Reish Lakish gives. But still, the ultimate responsibility derives from the fact that they should have been more careful, which is what the Balei Tosafot say, "Davalei la suki adate, shekenes pishtano l'tocha chanut, v'taglit b'ner, v'tamod atil mimea lo yuchal l'solka misham." I mean, that you should have anticipated certain things that would happen. And that anticipation is what makes you responsible over here, because of the fact that you could have anticipated something like this happening, and because of that anticipation, you're now responsible for it. Then that's a measure of connection, not necessarily a measure of shia or negligence, unless you say that the anticipation is what generates the negligence over here. By mere fact that you didn't anticipate it, you were negligent in your actions. So now the Gemara says, Tashma, what about this case? The madlik et gadish, beyada gidi kafutlo. Person lights this pile of grain, dry grain on fire, and there was a kid that was tied up there. The evid samuchlo, and there was an evid knani that was near that area. Benisrafimo. So then everything was burnt. That means that the pile, the kid, and the evid were all burnt in this fire. Chayav. In that case, you are responsible. Similarly, you're responsible for the grain that's there, and you're responsible for the gdi that was killed. On the other hand, evid kafutlo b'gdi samuchlo. On the other hand, if the evid was tied up, and the gdi, the kid, was proximate to the pile, but not tied up to it, v'nisra fimo, and everything was burnt up there, patur. Over there, you are patur. The reason being is that the Torah, and this is really an innovation of the Torah, we spoke about this earlier in the Masechta, the idea that the Torah sometimes has laws that seem very similar to Hammurabi's code, yet there are nuances or differences between them that are significant and a revolution within the world of halacha, which is, one of them is this, is that if a person kills an Eved Kanani, they are responsible for that as if they killed anybody else, and they'll be subject to the death penalty. Now then, in Hammurabi's code, depending on the status, social status of the person you killed, you'll have different responsibilities as to whether you're deserving the death penalty, as to whether one of the members of your family might be deserving of a death penalty, or whether you just pay and you get out of it. So here, the Torah makes it clear that if a person kills any human being, they are subject to the death penalty. That includes an Eved Kanani. So over here, if the person kills an Eved Kanani, he is subject to a death penalty. The question is, how this happened? In a case where the Eved Kanani is not tied up, then we assume that the Eved Kanani needs to escape from the fire. That's a natural human reaction to fire, and we have an expectation that he would have left the area. If he doesn't leave the area, then it's not the responsibility of the one who lit the fire, but rather the one who stayed in the area. So in the first scenario where the Eved dies, the reason the Eved died is because he didn't run away. It's his fault. In that case, you're not chayav mita, and that leaves you monetarily responsible for what happened. That's why you pay for the gadish and you pay for the gadi. On the other hand, in the seifa, where the Eved is tied up and you light the fire, in that case, it's clear that once you light the fire, the Eved has no means of escape, and therefore you're going to be held responsible for the killing of the Eved Kanani. Once you're held responsible, we have a principle of kimle b'deraba mine. It's sufficient with the great punishment, the great punishment meaning the death penalty. The person is subject to a death penalty for killing another individual. That's enough, and we're not going to make him pay the monetary obligations that are associated with that, and that's why it says patur. In the second case, it'll be patur, both for the grains, as well as the gdi. Now over here, there's a machloket Rashid, Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Tam. So it's Rashi and two of his grandsons, brothers over here, that are discussing why the Mishnah says that the gdi kafutlo, that the gdi was tied up. Rashi says the reason it says the gdi is tied up, even though if it wasn't tied up, you'd still be responsible for the gdi, because we don't say hayelo livroach ela babardat. Someone like a human being who has knowledge, understanding, wisdom of sort, that can make a decision, over there we say that he is responsible for himself, or he doesn't run away from the fire. And animals, which have instinct, but don't necessarily have good judgment, then even if it's not tied up, you're going to be responsible for it, because we don't say hayelo livroach. For that reason, you would not need it to be tied up in order for you to be responsible for the gdi. Why is it tied up? Because of parallel structure in the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives two cases, one where the Eved is tied up and the Gdi is free. So in the other case, it gives it just the opposite. The Gdi is tied up and the Eved is not tied up. And all it is doing is creating a parallel literary structure, but not a halachic implication. On the other hand, the Rashbam says, Tosafot brings it, Gdi nami hayelo livrach. We do say the same thing by a goat or a kid, that they should have run away. Just like we say by a human being, instinctively you run from fire, you don't stay around. So too, the animal should have run away. If it doesn't run away, then you would not be chayav. And the reason you need to be kafut over here is because that's why you're responsible. You're responsible for the gdi because it was tied up. Had it not been tied up, you would not have been responsible for the gdi. That's what the Rashbam says. Rabbeinu tam mefaresh titzrich gdi kafut techayav afagav de petrin and tamun beish. He says it's a chiddush over here because generally when it comes to fire, you are only responsible for things that are normally found there. So for instance, when you burn down the gadish, you're chayav for that which is visible, not that which is hidden inside the gadish. The reason being is, we don't expect there to be things hidden inside the gadish. And if the person puts it there, they acted unusually, and we don't make it responsible. So the same thing over here. It's not normal to tie up a kid near the gadish. So since that's unusual behavior, you would have thought maybe you're patur. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that no, you're still chayav, even though it's an unusual thing to have a gadi tied up there, you're still responsible. So that's why the Rabbeinu Tam says that it's talking about a case of tied up to tell you that chiddush, that even though it's tied up, you're still chayav. So you have a three-way machloket over here between Rashi, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rashbam as to why the gadi is tied up. For Rashi, it's simply parallel structure. For the Rashbam, it is because otherwise you would not be chayav. And for the Rabbeinu Tam, it's a chiddush that even in this case, you are still chayav. So now the Gemara says, Bishlam alaman demar isho mishum chitzav. For the one who says isho mishum chitzav, then I understand mishum hochi patur. That's why you are patur over here. Because it is, isho mishum chitzav means you killed the Evet. The person here killed the Evet. You killed the Evet, you have kimlei deraba minei, and therefore you are not responsible for the monetary obligations that came along with it. Alamanda mar yisho mishum mimono, according to Reish Lakish, who says, Eish is a din in mamon, am I patur? Why are you patur? Why? Katal torei avdo, if your money kills someone, hachanami do mechayiv, over there you're not going to be responsible for the monetary payments. We know that if someone's shur, someone's ox goes out and kills, if it's a tam, then you are patur, the gamre, the shur is put to death, but you as the owner are totally patur. If it's a mu'ad, you have to pay kofar for that. But it does say there, regam balav yumat, but yumat doesn't mean literally, but it means in a compensatory form, that you have to pay for the death of the individual, and the shor is put to death. Or the way that Rashi phrases it over here, that there is a knas of shloshim shekel when the shor kills an eved, but there's certainly no death penalty that is associated with it. And the Baalei Tosafot goes as far as to say that possibly over here you'd be chayav monetarily for the damage done to the Eved, since there is no chiyuv mitah, it turns into then a chiyuv mamon, whereby your mamon doing damage to the other party's mamon, you'd be responsible for the death of the Eved from a nizakin standpoint. But in neither case is the individual subject to a death penalty. If that's the case, why over here would you say that if he shows Mishum Mimono, according to Reish Lakish, it's the equivalent of your ox going out and killing. So too, your ish went out and killed someone. So therefore, you would be chayav in that case for the monetary obligations. There's no kimle mid'rabim minei. So how do you explain the case over here? Some of the chad, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, hachamayiskinan sheitzit bigufo shel evet, that he lit the fire on the evet itself. The kamle mid'rabim minei, because over there it's clear that he is responsible for the death of the evet. Because it's not Isho Mishum Mamano, it's Isho Mishum Kocho. Now, it's literally that he's lighting him on fire. Where it says, Ihochi, Maile Memra. What's the Kiddush over here? You have to tell me that if you light someone on fire, you're Chayav? I mean, that's so obvious. Lotzricha, Big D. Dechad, the Evet, Dechad. The Kiddush over here is that you do not have common ownership between the different objects over here. Which is that the Evet belongs to one owner, and the Gedi belongs to a different owner. So maybe you would suggest over here that the death of the Eved will not exonerate you or exempt you from payment of the Gedi because the Gedi is owned by someone else. So because you killed the Eved, which belongs to one person's property, then why should you be exempt for payment to another party who has nothing to do with the death that is caused here? The answer is that commonly the Rabbi Minei extends over, is able to cover the Gedi even though it's owned by someone else. Now, you just have to know that that is not so simple, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin and other places seems to indicate that you can separate between this when you say, basically, Mita Lezeh and Mamona Lezeh, that the death belongs to this party, is a one litigant or one party, and the Mamon belongs to another party over there. We will create a dual obligation, and you're both responsible for the death as well as the monetary obligations. So many of the Rishonim try to resolve this issue where our Gemara seems to indicate that Kimlei D'Rabba Minei applies even when there is different ownership. Whereas other sugyot and shas seem to indicate that you could separate then. If ownership and the killing are separated, or are about different parties, then maybe you would be chayav in those cases. Here you see, Tobali Tosafot bring one of the answers. It's considered to be like killing and payment to one individual. Because he is then responsible or chayav mita immediately. Because there you're responsible to kill him immediately because of the fact that he is now chasing someone else to kill them. If a person is chasing another party to kill them, and in that process they do damage to property along the way, are they deemed to be patur? Are they deemed to be chayav? The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, over there you consider it to be patur. But why? Kasha, the Perakam of the Sanhedrin, Amar, Mamon lezev, and Avshot lezev chayav. When it belongs to two different parties, you are chayav for both the payment. And that would should be the similar thing over here. What he answers is that once you become a rodef, you're chasing a party, you are subject to the death penalty immediately and by every party that can intervene. Which is that if you see someone trying to kill another party, you have an obligation to intervene and stop him. And even intervene at the cost of his life to stop him from killing someone else. That means that even the owner of the kelim that are there, he's also involved in this process. He has to, or has an obligation to kill this individual. And therefore that chiyuv mita, that death penalty that is, this rodef is subject to, is the responsibility of everyone. Since it's the responsibility of everyone, then there's no separation between the killer is going to be penalized and the ownership of the property. Because the death penalty that is owed to him is the responsibility even of the owner of the kelim. And therefore now we've created single ownership. On the other hand, he brings Rabbeinu Tamifresh, T'chol makom mita lezev v'tashlim ezev patur, levad me'edim zomimim, debina and shitkayim, kashir zaman b'kol echad. He says, no. That idea that mita lezev and tashlimim lezev is patur is everywhere, except in the case of edim zomimim. And that's the exact case where the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, you could be mita lezev, mamon lezev, they should be separate, and they shouldn't apply kimle derabim mineh. So Rabbeinu Tam says that's a chiddush in Edim Zomimim. Everywhere else we will say you are patur, despite the fact that there's differentiated ownership from the person that is killed. Nevertheless, you'll be patur. Why by Edim Zomimim is there a different din? Because Edim Zomimim has a very particular punishment which says, kashir zaman. You have to do to the Edim Zomimim what they were trying to do to other parties. They were trying to cause damage and kill or cause a death penalty to other parties. That responsibility then lays upon them by which we say if it's two different parties, there's no concept of kimle derabim mineh, because kashir zaman has a particular necessity to be carried out with each party they were trying to injure. So the case there is a case where they come to testify about a woman that had a premarital affair while she was engaged. Therefore, she is subject to the death penalty. Her father is going to lose out on the demei betulim or the knas that we get from motzi shemra. When they're found to be edim zomimim, we say, pay the father the money that you're going to cause the loss to him. They'll give death penalty to you for the death penalty you're going to cause to the daughter. That's kashir zaman. To each party, they are responsible for what they were trying to do. Over there, we will say that you're chayav individually. In other, every other case, we will say that the death penalty is enough to exempt you from payment in any of these instances. So now the Gemara says, Tashma. So this is something we already saw back on Ted Amud Bet. Hashaleach eda bi'ira biyad echeres shoteh v'katan. Person who sends a fire along with the echeres shoteh v'katan. Patur midine adam v'chayav midine shamayim. Your patur courts can't bring you to responsibility, but you carry a moral responsibility, which in shamayim they will take care of. Bishlam alaman demar isho mishum chitzav. The reason that you're patur over here, if it's isho mishum chitzav d'chereshu. It's the arrows of the cheresh. The fire now spread or was caused to move by the cheresh, the shoteh v'katan, which are parties that are not responsible, and therefore that's why there's a tour b'bnei adam, is because it's the chetz of the cheresh v'katan. The fact that you gave it to them, which was irresponsible or morally delinquent, that they'll take care of in shamayim. El aman damar yisho mishum mimono, ilu masar shoro the cheresh shoteh v'katan, achinami delo michayev. If you say yisho mishum mimono, the fact that you hand them over to irresponsible parties does not exempt you from the damage that's done. If you hand over your shore to an irresponsible party, you are obligated to make compensation for the damage that's done because you didn't take care of your mamon. So it's over here, if you give the eish to an irresponsible party, you should be responsible for anything that happens to that eish. Hayiz Ma'ala, and that's what we saw back on Ten Amud Bet, that Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan described differently the case by Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam, which is, Amar Reish Lakish Mishmei Techizkia, Lushanu Alekish Amasa Lo Gachelet V'Liba. The only time where we say you are patur is in a case where he handed over an ebbing coal to the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam, and then they, instead of allowing it to ebb and extinguish itself, they blow on it. They bellow the flame or the coal, and they cause it then to reignite and to spread. So over there, you have a real interaction between the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam and the fire, meaning that they are almost a direct cause of the fire, because if the status quo had remained, the coal would have extinguished itself, burnt itself out. So that's why Reish Lakish says you're patur over there. Aval, masar lo shalhevet, ein ochanami, if you handed him a flame, chayav, you wouldn't be responsible because it's mimono. You hand him a live flame, that's your mamon. You hand it to an irresponsible party. Your mamon that does damage, hand it to an irresponsible party, is your problem. And therefore, Reish Lakish will believe if you hand a live flame to them, you will be responsible. My taima, what's the reason? Bari chazeka. The difference between the two cases is how ready and apparent is the damage. When the case of the shalhevet, we know that it's immediate or almost a mazik that exists currently. The flame itself is deemed to be a mazik, and therefore when you hand it to someone else who's not responsible, the mazik still exists, because mazik is here. When you hand them a coal, the mazik doesn't exist until another action is taken. Therefore, when the other action is taken, that's when it becomes a mazik, you're not directly involved with that. That was the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam causing or changing it into a mazik. That we won't make you directly responsible for it. Shemayim will take you to task for that, but we can't take you to court for that because it wasn't your direct behavior or it wasn't deemed to be a mazik yet when you handed it to the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam. So when you hand it to the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam, it's not a mazik. You're not taking a damaging item and handing it to an irresponsible party. You're handing a neutral item to an irresponsible party. Then they take action that's already outside of the realm of your responsibility. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu shalhevet patur. Even if you hand him a flame, you are patur. Kasavar tzavta decherish kagarim. Because the tzavta, this is what we said back on Ten Amud Bet, there's a machloket there whether it was spelled with a vav or with a vet. Tzavta could mean tongs, or tzavta can mean companionship. Either way, it means the same thing over here, which is that the marrying of the action of the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam with the flame is what caused the problem. Without their action, the fire would not have spread. Or again, the fire would have self-extinguished. The flame would have burnt itself out. They need to take a certain amount of action in order for the flame to spread, and therefore we're not going to make you responsible in that case. So therefore, it's after the Cheresh Kagarim. You're not chayev until you give it over to him. Gavsa silta v'shragel. The way Rashi reads this literally is that you give him the flame and the fuel together. You hand him over the kindling and the dry wood and the flame, and you put them all in his hands. There you brought it so close to the point where everything would just combust in a moment's notice. That already is too far. But if you only hand him the flame and you don't hand him the fuel or anything else that is going to happen over there, that is not considered to be responsibility or your responsibility. Rabbeinu Chanan over here says that when you hand the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katam, the fire and the fuel together, he says, Kolmar, Maseh Shel Cheresh Hu, V'Achim Sorlo Eitzim Kutatim, Kein Kaneh, he hands them over like a reed. Merusas, Sha'esh, Shemechezebein, Inan Tzrichim Liboy, they don't require any bellowing or they don't need any fanning of the flames. Kugon Zeh, V'Adai Maseh HaSholeah Chain. He says, it's as if we attribute it, as if it's your action. We bring it directly back to you. And that's what, the way that the Rabbeinu Chanan phrases that responsibility there is that we consider it, when you give that type of raw materials and flame together, we attribute that action directly to you now, and not as if you are responsible for what they did, but rather, you are the one who did it. Because, gufa, it's as if you actually took that action, which is a very strong formulation of what Rabbi Yochanan is saying in the case where you're chayav. It's not simply you're responsible, but you did it, because of the way that you handed in the items. He doesn't need to do anything for the flames to be combustible at that time. We discussed back there that maybe the difference between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan revolves around whether the Chiyuv V'Nezek is about the connection between you and the object that is doing the damage, or whether it's about the Pshia, about the negligence of the party, and that maybe you could explain their machloket along those lines. Again, we'll reference you back to Tenemut Bet. I'm not going to go into depth here, but that may be a way to explain the difference here between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish's view as to how much of a problematic item that you have to give to the Chereshot V'Katan before it becomes your responsibility. Over here, there are others who describe that the Masalei Gaza Silta V'Shraga, not like Rashi where he hands him all the raw materials and then the Cheresh has to put them together, but almost that he literally hands him the fire with the fuel and in a Ruach Mitzuyah, all of this will combust and start to spread as a fire. And then he tells the Cheresh to watch this and make sure that that doesn't happen. That's very much more equivalent to the case of the Cheresh Shotei V'Katan watching the Shur. Also over here, they're watching something that its natural behavior is to be a mazik, similar to the case of the shor, which is, if you just leave it alone, it'll go out and do damage. Similarly, here, if you just leave the fire with the kindling and everything that's there, it will do damage in a ruach mitzuyah. And therefore, when you ask them to watch it, you're putting it in the hands of an irresponsible party, and that's where Rabbi Yochanan is going to say you are chayav. And that's what makes you responsible over here. Tosafot asked here a very basic question, which is the problem of Rabbi Yochanan Shita, which is, and when it comes to fire, we are saying that you are responsible for fire when you light in your property, even when a normal wind comes along and moves it. Why? Should have anticipated there's going to be a problem, or the equivalent of Ruach Mitzuyah. What Tosafot says over here is, Teima Lari, Ichoshim Isir the Cheresh Keruach Mitzuyah, the Rabbi Yochanan Ami Michayev. If you think handing over Cheresh Yod V'Katan, an Eish, is the equivalent of having a normal wind come along and spread it, which is along the lines of your question, you hand it to an irresponsible party, you can assume that a katan, you give a child a candle, they're going to crawl around, they're going to move it around, they're going to light things on fire. That's like a ruach mitzuyah. V'lo chashiv k'ruach mitzuyah, imkei makasha l'reish lakish. Haludami l'masa shiro, da'akuli amamodu, dein chayivin klal, ala eish, ela biyocholo l'chazik b'ruach mitzuyah. So, depending on how you view the chereshot of a katan over here, it either would say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it should be chayav, because it's like a normal wind. Or if you think it's not a normal wind, then why is there even a question on Reish Lakish over here why you're not chayav? It's not like your shore, where it's acting normally and it's doing things that you would expect. Ruach Sheina Mitzuya is not something you have to anticipate. But Marie, Delaman Damar Yisho Mishum Chitzavu, Lo Michayev Elo Be'esh Yachol Azik Beruach Mitzuya Harbei. V'koro L'Vadai Hazek Ein Chitzav. But the Bali and Tosafot go back to this concept of Yisho Mishum Chitzav and says that that comparison to Chitzav, before he said it more like a analogous type of damage, now he's saying, oh, it's got to be a little more than just analogous. It's got to be something that is almost certain. Like when you shoot an arrow, it's certain that that will do damage. So when you light the fire, it has to be so karov, so close to being certain that the fire is going to spread, that's when you're responsible. But if there's any question or any doubts in there, then we would maybe exempt you in that case because maybe you shouldn't have, or you can't anticipate it. That means that according to Rabbi Yochanan, you need, first of all, like an 80% chance that it's going to spread. A 51% chance that it's going to spread may not be enough for you to be responsible because that's not similar enough to an arrow. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan, filu masalo shoevet, la mishum da azalatameh, di lei shil mishum chitzav, da masig id lei nami mishum memono, el mishum kasavar shoevet, lo bari chazeka kamo shor. He says, the reason that you're patur when you hand him the flame is not because of isho mishum chitzav, but rather because he doesn't think it's Bari Chazeka. Against what Reish Lakish thinks that that's already Bari Chazeka. He says, no, you still need input from the Chereshot of a Katan, and that's what makes you responsible over here. Without that, the flame in and of itself is not considered to be a mazik, or enough of a mazik to make you responsible in this case. So now the Gemara continues, it says, Amarova, Kra umatnita mesiari le Rabbi Yochanan. The Pasuk and the Breita support Rabbi Yochanan's position. Kroktiv, the pasuk says ki teitzei eish, teitzei me'atzma. So there it says ki teitzei eish, when the fire goes out. The teitzei is not the active verb, but rather the passive verb. If you were talking about someone who was igniting things, then it wouldn't say ki teitzei eish, it should be ki yadlik or ki yavir eish. It should be an active verb. And for Reish Lakish, the only way you're going to be responsible for fire is if you're actively engaging the fire or touching the fire to something. That's when you're responsible for it. Otherwise, you're not responsible for the eish because we can't associate it with you directly. Once it leaves your koach or it leaves your direct periphery or obligations, then it's not your responsibility. So kiteitz eish seems to be the wrong words to use in the pasuk if you really believe eisho mishum mimono. Rather, it should be yadlik eish, where it's an active form of the verb.
Teitzei me'asham, yishalem amavir et ha'beira. And then the person who lit the fire is responsible. So the lighter of the fire is responsible even when the ash is moving, quote-unquote, passively. Shma mina, yishol mishum chitzav, that's one proof. Madnita is a braita later on, found on daf samachod midbet. The braita says, patach hakatub beniske mimono, v'siyem beniske gufo. The pasuk begins talking about mamon, and then ends with niske gufo. Lomar lecha, to teach you, isho mishum chitzav, to teach you that esh is mishum chitzav, which is that beniske mamono, it says kitetze esh, that is happening by itself. Yet when it comes to the responsibility, it says, to correlate mavir abeira. When it says that you're responsible, it says amavir abeira, that you were the one who lit the fire. So the pasuk starts by saying, you're responsible for what the fire does. And that's kitetz eish, as if it's like your mamon going out and doing damage, and you're responsible for it. But then, you know, when it comes to that responsibility, the Torah terms it as amavir abeira, as if you literally lit the fire. So what it's saying is that even though the fire is moving by itself, and spreading by itself, we nevertheless deem it as if you are the one lighting the fire everywhere, which is similar to the concept of Yisho Mishum Chitzav, and not Yisho Mishum Mimono. So the Braita, in speaking about the Pasuk, says that the attribution of responsibility, as if you lit the fire physically, even though the fire is spreading by itself, leans much more heavily towards the explanation of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that's Yisho Mishum Chitzav, rather than Yisho Mishum Mimono. If it was just Mimono, we wouldn't call it as if you killed. We just say it's your responsibility because your Mamon did damage. And therefore, it should not say Amavir et Beira. It should simply say that the owner or the cause of the fire should be the one who is responsible, but not that you are literally like lighting fire. All right, we're going to stop here on the second line on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph.